which is sponsored by the Department of Justice, talks about developing a curriculum, implementing it, and then allowing the licensing agencies to determine whether or not certain individuals have to, in fact, take and successfully complete the training. This would not be a mandatory training for everybody who's required to report. That really wouldn't make sense. Doctors don't all need to have this kind of training, but I'm sure the licensing board for the doctors could determine who should have the training, who should successfully complete the training. For instance, pediatricians who come in contact with children daily, emergency room doctors who come in contact with children daily, but not necessarily a surgeon. But again, that is not an absolute requirement that they successfully complete the training or that they even take it. But the hope is that if you mandate the development and implementation of it, then the licensing boards would be willing then to require certain individuals to do that. Same way for police agencies. It may not be important for every police officer to take this kind of training, but those who do investigations of child abuse and sexual abuse certainly, by minimum, should have some training in what is child abuse and what is an appropriate investigation. The second part of the bill, the first part is for mandatory reporting, mandatory reporters to receive training. The second part of the bill is for those who are mandated by law, CSD and law enforcement agencies, to get training for the investigation that they have to do. By law now, if the report comes in and it's initially assessed as being valid, they have to go out and do an investigation on it. It's important for them to understand, again, what is abuse under Oregon law, interviewing techniques for victims, behavioral indicators of abuse, sensitivity towards victims and families, services to be provided to victims and families, should we take them into protective services, should we not, gathering and preserving of evidence. I'd like to say that in my experience as a deputy district attorney in Marion County doing juvenile and dependency work and as a counsel for Children's Services Division, that we always have law enforcement officers who are experts in this area when they go out. I'd like to say that we always have CSD personnel who have been trained and adequately trained to go out and do these kind of investigations. I'm here to tell you from my personal experience that that is not necessarily true. When you have a professional who's been professionally trained in doing investigation and assessment, going out and doing that type of thing, you find that you're going to get a much better understanding of what's going on, and you're going to get valid reports. Those that are invalid are going to end up being invalid. Those that are valid, you're going to know sooner on. When they haven't taken them to the doctor, when they haven't talked to the suspect, when they haven't gotten any medical records that are there, that's when you have the confusing situation where potentially a false report can proceed, a child can stay in care longer than is necessary, or at the very least, it's a very traumatic situation for the family who really doesn't know what's going on. When the evidence has been done, you see pleas in the case by the defendant, you see them stipulating to the jurisdiction of the court, and you see the healing process going on in terms of treatment. That's what we want to do with this law. We want to make sure that those individuals who, again, by law now are doing investigations, are doing the reporting, do receive the kind of training that's necessary for them to determine and assess whether or not this is a valid case or not. And I have had doctors call me on the phone and nurses and teachers and say, is this child abuse under the law? Do I have to report this? Do I have a privilege? What's going to happen if I don't report? Again, they haven't received the kind of training that they need, although they are mandated by law to make these kind of decisions and proceed. Certainly you have the statistics on these kind of cases, and you know that we're getting an increased number of reports. True or untrue, we're getting a lot of these reports, and it's taxing the system, both for mandatory reporters and for CSD and law enforcement that have to do investigation. If they've got the skills, they know how to do it right, hopefully they're going to do a better job, and we're going to see these cases get resolved faster. And really, that's the whole concept and the idea behind this bill.
Thank you. Mr. Green?
I'm James Green. I'm the training coordinator for the Children's Services Division. I will honor your request in the interest of time and because my testimony has been beautifully given by predecessors. Simply said, it is our belief as a division that this bill is totally supportable. We do support, however, the differentiations made in 3036 and would encourage your review of those. We can only concur with what Mrs. Wilson has said and what others have said previously. If indeed people who are obligated to train under the law, to report under the law, are more more accurate in the reporting due to training, we will have more accurate reports. Conceivably, that means we could have more reports, but at least they will be accurate. They will be more readily resolved. On the other side of the coin, we will have fewer that we are wasting time on. On the other hand, in relation to our staff and those staff who are obligated to investigate, it is conceivable that we can and would do a much more effective job if we had better reports and then finally had a better means of systematically investigating and not traumatizing the family. That ends my testimony.
Thank you very much. Let me ask two questions, clarifying again. House Bill 3036 would cover the same activity, but it would lay it out you're basically in favor of 3027, but your preference would be 3036.
Correct. 3037 started out as a draft. It was sent out to different people to get their comments on it. After we got the comments, we put together 3036.
Let me ask you if you would have some conversation with some of the other proponents of this bill to see if we want to put one aside and move the other one. The other question is on this bill, if it should go forward. I'll ask, since you're here, Mr. Green, the question. I'm bothered by the Children's Services, to go back and I asked this before, the Children's Services Division or the Professional Licensing Board, how would that be decided? I have a problem about that kind of language because it always sort of, you know, well, you do it, and you have this. Mm-hmm. Well, we thought they did it, and then you come back next time and somebody wants to mandate it or whatever.
Well, if I understand your question correctly, licensing boards would presumably have some distinct responsibility for determining what is feasible for those people that are licensed who are obligated to report. It would seem logical to look to agencies such as the Children's Services Division that certainly have major responsibility in the area of carrying out the laws around child abuse to be major leaders, if you will, or taking the lead in helping to assess, determine the type of training, what is logically going to make best sense from the standpoint of reporting, as well as really determining what kinds of training should happen for law enforcement and CSD staff. Is that?
Well, sort of, and I don't think I want to pursue it. Maybe a hang up with me in the language. It's the idea that it's the Children's Services Division or the Professional Licensing Board of a law enforcement agency shall require, and I'm wondering,
okay. It
ought to be either one or the other, I guess,
I think it's much clearer in the language of 3036, which makes a very clear distinction between CSD, the Board of State Police, and the Board of BPST taking the responsibility for the investigative bodies and the licensing boards taking responsibility for the reporting bodies. Is that it?
Yes, there is a distinction. Really, the licensing boards are over the mandatory reporters, so their training would be in the reporting aspect of it. CSD and BPST, state police, have to do the investigation once the report comes in. They would be responsible for doing the curriculum and training for the investigation part of it. Again, there'd probably be some hope that somewhere along the line everybody would work together, but it is different functions. The report, reasonable cause to believe, making the report is separate from the function of investigation.
Thank you. Mr. Springer?
Just a couple of quick ones, I believe, for our witness from CSD and Mr. Green. I think you've, in your statement on the final page, you predict a fiscal impact for $74,000 for 2 years. And that's predicated, I guess, on one full-time position to develop the curriculum and deliver the training within CSD. What's your current training budget now?
The current training budget for the division is, at this point, $110,000 for actual expenditures of training. That does not include the FTE, and I do not have the full figure on that. I believe we are at about $350,000 when we talk about FTE, capital outlay, service and supplies, and all of that.
That's not just for child abuse reports, though.
No, that is for the total agency.
Okay, so your total agency now, what's the bottom line for your total expenditures in terms of personnel, services?
I think what we would have to say is it's $350,000.
Is there any part of your training curriculum now which focuses upon the kind of training that's discussed in either of these two bills?
Yes, but not on an ongoing basis. It's unfortunately, it's like so many other things in the division at this point relating to training. It's been a soft spot, and so we do not have a consistent training package.
Take somebody off the street, say a professional who's licensed, let's pick an attorney, presumably would be subject to that kind of requirement as a potential reporter. How long would it take someone to, quote, I guess, understand the basic principles that you would want them to understand in a curriculum for understanding?
I've given some thought to this because I'm right now working with Western Oregon on trying to develop such a curriculum. And apropos of these bills, my belief is that it is a two-part piece. A week long is what I believe it would take for the persons who are not reporters. Mm-hmm. The reporters, I would believe, we could probably do something in the neighborhood of 2, max 3 days. But I say 2 simply for sure because I do not want that shortchanged.
Just a final question. Is this training that could be provided, say, as part of a curriculum offered at Chemeketa or other community colleges?
The construct that I'm working on with Western Oregon is exactly that. It would be basically, they would assist us in providing the training. Each person that goes through it would be on a paid basis, on a cost per basis. And this, the construct that we're looking at is a week long. We have not looked at trying to do the one for the reporters, but yes, I see no reason why not.
Thanks very much.
Thank you. Are there further questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
See, Dennis Turi.
Dennis Turi, I'm the Executive Director of the Parents Education Association. I've submitted some prepared testimony there. I'll depart from that, though, to address some issues that have been brought up so far. My testimony deals specifically with some of the specific wording in terms of the definition of child abuse found in Oregon Administrative Rules. I'm also here, I pastor a small church in Portland. I'm also the father of 4 children. Because I pastor a small church, I'm a mandatory reporter under the provisions that we're discussing in this meeting. I'm greatly concerned over what it seems to me and to the people in our organization is an increasing spiral in terms of state overreaction to a problem which, though real and must be dealt with, yet we believe that the steps that are being taken to deal with that problem are actually exacerbating the problem and not helping it. I believe specifically that the legislation before you would serve to increase that spiral of overreaction and as a result actually end up having children abused more in this state. Now, I just want to briefly talk why I believe that in terms of some very general statements here. The specifics in terms of the definitions themselves are found in the testimony I've submitted. But the point I'm trying to make here is that what's happened in this state is we've extended, whether or not we want to agree to the terminology or not, we have in effect extended the law enforcement agencies of the state into a bunch of professional areas, clergymen, mandatory reporters. At the same time, we've taken a definition of child abuse. We've extended that definition in October of 1986 through expansive definitions. As I said, there's specifics in the testimony here. You mix those two things together, a tremendous group of not required reporters now, an expansive definition that is unclear at best and vague and foggy at worst, and what you end up with is a tremendous number of false reports. Now, it's interesting to me that the people that have advocated this legislation here so far this afternoon have made both statements. We heard the first two people testify on this bill saying that this mandatory training would get people who are now reluctant to testify and reluctant to report about child abuse cases, having been trained in that they'll now be more apt to testify or to come forward and report suspected child abuse. On the other hand, we hear that no, this will actually increase the number of false reports. In my mind, there is absolutely no doubt but that if you take the tens of thousands or maybe even hundreds of thousands of mandatory reporters we now have in the state of Oregon, you subject them to a training program in which they get a comprehensive understanding of the current definitions of child abuse found in Oregon administrative rule and the company's CSD guidelines, which have to flesh out what's said in the rules, and now you're going to have tens of thousands of people who are tremendously sensitized as what could possibly be construed as child abuse in this state. Those people are under further under criminal and civil liability if they don't report cases that are suspected, or if Attorney General Fromar's proposals are passed that are suspected. Now they have to have reasonable cause. But the point is, you've got to look at the definition if you're going to talk about training people in that definition. That definition as it exists now has statements, seven times in the definition we read the statement includes but is not limited to. The definition does not define what child abuse is. As a mandatory reporter, I've sought help from the Multnomah County Hotline and had really no success there either. Now, I suppose someone could say that's because of a lack of education again. But the point is, the education can't change the definition. That definition is fixed in Oregon administrative rule. All that the education can do is educate people as to what that definition says. And if I, as a mandatory reporter, go into a training class offered by CSD or by a community college or whatever, and I'm told that one of the signs of child abuse is small physical size, and I'm told that according to the statutory definition in Oregon administrative rule, rather, a rule definition of child abuse, that failure to thrive or improper nurturing is child abuse, and that smallness of size is an indication of improper nurturing, if I've got a small child that I'm dealing with, and I think the family may not have enough money, I've got to report that family. The point is, those definitions, as long as they're made left expansive and vague, will fill the number of false reports. There's a lot of statistics said earlier about false reporting and how many reports are valid. In point of fact, there's only one organization that's mandated nationally to produce accurate statistics, the American Humane Association. They confirmed that over a million families were falsely accused in 1985 alone. Now, the point is, there's a lot of false reports now. State of Oregon has probably its proportionate share, somewhere in the area of 65%. You enact this legislation without changing the definition and then increase the penalties on those mandatory reporters, and you're going to see a double, a tripling, and maybe a quadrupling of the number of reports of child abuse. We're going to come back in 2 years having CSD people come up here and tell you, we have a terrible epidemic now, we told you it was an epidemic, now we've got 40,000 cases. Will it really be increases of cases of child abuse? Our position is that it will not. All it will be is sensitizing people to the dangers that they suffer personally and professionally if they don't report all suspected cases according to the current definition, which is expansive. That definition has things such as threat of harm involved in it. The definition, according to CSD spokesman, when the rules were adopted the first week of October, on a televised interview, we can get copies of if you'd like, CSD said that spanking is now a gray area in the state of Oregon. We don't know if it's okay or not okay. According to the rules, it could go one way or the other. If there's any bruising at all of a child's behind because of the application of a rod, we know that's child abuse. So what's a person like myself as a mandatory reporter to do if I know people are being spanked? I'm going to have to go with the broadest possible understanding of that definition unless I want to suffer a $1,000 fine and a possible civil lawsuit. Training is a good idea. It's a great idea if we had law enforcement officials conducting these investigations, and that's probably where it should be in the first place. But if you've got 100,000 teachers, lawyers, clergymen, and everything else out there, and train those people in these loose definitions, all you're going to do is end up taxing that system, which is overly taxed now, even more. And again, as I said last week in front of this committee, that means that the people that are really abusing the kids are going to be lost in that myriad of numbers, and so we're going to go right exactly in the reverse direction of what we should be doing. I think that what we should do instead, if we're going to talk about training people, is go back, look at that definition again, make sure we have a definition that is teachable, and that the teaching of it wouldn't produce an excess number of false reports, which is what would occur now with the rules in front of you that are referenced in the testimony that I prepared for you. I guess in conclusion then, our position on this bill is that we should go back, as I quoted from Dr. Basharoff before, who was the first director of the Health and Human Services National Center on Child Abuse and Neglect. He said that to reduce the simultaneous over and under intervention that now plagues child protective efforts should be our first priority. The major cause of the system's decision-making problems, does he say it's education? No. He says it's the vagueness and overbreadth of the legal standards governing state intervention. We need to address the idea of definitions before we can go on to put training on or administrative rules that then would produce a flurry of new reports, calls for more additional state funding, calls for further intervention, probably broadening the number of state reporters again, and as a result, a continuing spiral both of a perceived problem and an actual problem of child abuse, because we haven't dealt with the primary problem, which is defining what point the state should intervene at. This piece of legislation, I think, should be tabled unless it's going to be amended to include definitions similar to the ones that we propose in the SB 782 that's in Senate Judiciary Committee right now.
Thank you, Mr. Turia. Are there questions? Well, thank you for your written testimony. Appreciate that. Okay, we'll move to House Bill 3215. Collins went home.
Yes.
Godwin.
Yeah, cast the whole shot.
Cast in thousands.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, very briefly, I'm Diana Godwin, representing the Oregon Psychological Association and the Oregon Academy of Professional Psychologists, in support of House Bill 3215 with amendments. I'm also authorized to speak on behalf of Mr. John Collins, representing the Oregon District Attorneys Association, and also Mr. Barry Cast, representing the Mental Health Division, particularly on the amendments. This bill is necessitated by a Court of Appeals decision, a Cunningham decision, and I'm sorry I don't have the citation for you, but I will certainly get that to Mr. Taylor, a copy of the case, which precluded the courts from using local mental health care providers to conduct these examinations of persons who have been convicted of sexual offenses to determine whether or not they are sexually dangerous persons. The case said they must go through the state mental hospital, and that has caused a tremendous backlog in getting examinations of these sexually dangerous persons. Mr. Collins was prepared to testify that in his county alone, it was causing a six-month delay in getting these persons who've been convicted of sexual offenses sentenced by the court because they were waiting on getting the reports back, the examination done. And what they'd like to be able to do is use local mental health care providers who are qualified to conduct these examinations and cut down the expense of having to have the person examined at the state mental hospital. Now, there are amendments which Mr. Cast and Mr. Collins and I agreed on out in the hall. I have them written out by hand if you'd like. Obviously, I will have those typed up and provided in 12 copies to your council prior to your work session. Essentially, amendment would say, however, as you can see in the bill, in the new language, it appears lines 9 through 12. That language would read that the court may order an examination of the defendant and a report to the court by a local mental health care provider licensed or registered by the state of Oregon who has been approved by the Mental Health Division to conduct such examinations. And then it would say that the defendant may be examined at a place other than a facility. And also in line 11, we would replace the word psychiatrist with the phrase local mental health care provider. Both Mr. Collins and Mr. Cast independently were coming in today prepared to testify that the language limiting these examinations to psychiatrists was far too narrow, and that many psychiatrists have no training in this, and other mental health providers like psychologists or registered clinical social workers may have very specific training in sexual offender cases. But we are leery about opening it up to anybody to conduct these examinations because a person's liberty may well be at stake, and we want to make sure these examinations are conducted by qualified people. And that's why we would also allow the Mental Health Division to determine what level of training in these sexual offender cases would be required before a person could certify someone as a sexually dangerous person. That's a very significant label to put on someone. So you want to make sure that you've got some safeguards built into that system. And that's all I have, Mr. Chair, unless you have questions.
I may have missed it in your opening, but what hat are you wearing today?
Representing the Oregon Psychological Association, the psychologists.
Did you provide us with those amendments? I don't know.
Well, I did provide an earlier amendment which merely added the word psychologist after the word psychiatrist. But after I got here and talked with Mr. Collins and Mr. Cast, we decided on a different version, and out in the hall, I have handwritten it out. Right. And as I said, I will get that typed up to your counsel.
Okay. questions? Look forward to the typed version of that, or whatever.
But it is a good bill. It will make it more possible to get these exams done on a more timely basis.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you very much. Anybody else here on that bill? Okay, the last bill we have is House Bill 2869. They haven't taken your children away. CSD hasn't confiscated your children.
Thank you. This will be brief. For the record, Kingsley Quick with the State Court Administrator's Office. I basically want to enter into the record Bill Linden's testimony, commentary on the bill, and some amendments that clear up some inconsistencies in the present bill. There may be some other amendments or related bills that are being prepared by Legislative Council, which will be available shortly. Just 2 points on the materials before you. The purpose of this bill is to further define the scope of the Indigent Defense Board. It would enhance the ability of the board to account for expenditures. It would help them control costs and make more accurate budget projections. If you have some questions now, I would like to answer them. If not, we're available any time to come back on this.
What do you say?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Sprayer.
I wasn't sure how long it might take for us to get to the indigent defense issue. I think just a quick bit of background information is that Chair and others may be aware, Representative Hooley, at the request of the co-chairs of the Ways and Means Committee and the leadership, had convened kind of an informal group it was also suggested by Chief Justice, I believe, early in the session that this kind of group be convened to try to explore the many ideas that have been kicking around as it relates to the indigent defense system, problems related there to primarily financial in nature. And a lot of the discussion focused on bills which are concepts which have been before this committee either in previous sessions or earlier this session. And Ms. Click has spoken to one of those vehicles. Mr. Gruber was asked to come up to be available and perhaps take a few moments to bring us up to date in terms of the other bills and amendments that are going to be coming before this committee. And I believe the leadership has, as recently as yesterday in a meeting with the co-chairs of Ways and Means, have indicated that they hope to complete the Ways and Means budget as it relates to indigent defense by the end of the month. One date I've heard is April 20th, prior to Representative Hooley's departure from the legislature, which is going to be before the end of the month also, and that they have asked us, our committee, to try to deal with not only 2869, but also the other issues that Mr. Gruber's been working on sometime within the next 10 days to 2 weeks. And I've assured the Speaker that given our other priorities, I think we can handle that assignment. And I think Mr. Gruber is here to maybe just give us some indication of when those amendments are going to be available and what bills they are, and whether or not we do have the appropriate vehicles to deal with those issues that came from the working group. And I guess I would invite Frank to join Ms. Click and maybe speak briefly to those, the work that he's hopefully going to be bringing to us here very shortly.
Yeah, this is going to be Indigent Defense Week next week, is that it? Indigent Defense Week next week.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Frank Gruber from Council's office. What we have is one bill that was requested prior to by Representative Springer prior to my first attendance at these meetings that Representative Hooley held, and that is a bill dealing with more detailed fiscal impact assessments on legislation dealing with creation of new crimes, increase of penalties of crimes, and so on. And that would deal with fiscal impacts as to law enforcement, district attorneys, the courts, corrections, those various aspects of the criminal justice system. That bill is complete. It's a discrete bill. And Mr. Springer has copies, and I, as with all of these, I am not sure what you intend, or the you being the committee, would intend to do as far as the vehicles. Some of the vehicles that were suggested during the meetings that Representative Hooley conducted would be inappropriate as far as relating clause, and you'd have legal problems there. So I don't know how you want to handle this, or whether there's speaker approval for introduction, or how you're going to do that, but that one is done.
There's a letter to, what's the LC draft on that, Frank, again?
That's 3283, and that was one that you requested as one of your priorities, I think is how we docketed it.
Right, there's a letter to the speaker requesting her permission to go ahead and introduce that as a committee bill.
The other bills, and I've drafted all of these as bills. If you find other vehicles to tack them on to, it's easy enough to say that that bill would be amended on page such and such after the last line to add the text of this. But right now, they're all drafted as separate LC draft bills. And there are four of those.